All right, we're live.
Yes, sir.
Now, I want to talk first to the people across the nation that are not in the Los Angeles area. I told you can expect us to be live at 7 p.m. any day. I've been telling you that for a couple of weeks. You may feel left out of the drive to get 300. That only affects Los Angeles. But we're returning to the 7 o'clock hour because that means it's 10 o'clock in New York and earlier across the nation. So much of our audience could only pick up a live program east when you stayed up past midnight. We are fighting a spiritual battle. Going to determine much of the future of the church in Los Angeles and the ministry, since this is the base. I need the support of those of you across the nation getting on these phones and declaring your support, expressing your faith and your commitments. No longer does Los Angeles carry the percentage of the financial support that it used to. Most of the support comes outside of Los Angeles now. Is Los Angeles needed? As long as they understand, this ministry will get along without them. Now, there are a lot of people in this church, particularly here in Los Angeles, who think that the mileage and the seniority and the years of service or whatever measure of faithfulness gives you some seniority. It only gives you seniority in terms of how long you've been faithful. It doesn't give you any seniority in terms of preference or dominance. It is the nature of mankind to be judgmental and critical. That's why Jesus could do no mighty works in Nazareth. That's why you are wasting your time trying to convert your family. You're just wasting your time. They're waiting for you to hit a hard knock or a hard rock and succumb to a little bit of human weakness so they can say, "I told you so." God could so fill you with His Spirit that Jesus would be amazed at the reflection of Himself. And your family would still see you with the image they have formed of you. And particularly, if you have come to God, the rationales that they have formed as to why they will not allow you to be seen in their eyes as spiritually beyond them. You become like the law in Paul's teaching to expose their sin. And they can only continue to live with themselves by pulling you down. Now, this church has become a lot like a family. I'm spiritual father and grandfather. And there's a bunch of you that have reached a stage that you think you can sit in judgment on me. Just like the Israelites perennially judged Moses and his sister and his brother, the most blatant. Now, there's a pocket of old guard people in this church . They're sitting in judgment of me, and there's some old guard people that thought they were so indispensable to this ministry. They sit in judgment of the position I've given my wife, Melissa. I want to tell you something. I spent 25 years with a dream that out of this congregation would come my successor. I've said publicly years ago, you will never elect another pastor. Years ago, when this church was in such a terrible state, they met my 16 terms. They still stand. And don't even think about a chance to revise them. You got one choice here. You follow me as I follow Christ, or you get out. I'm telling you, 25 years with spiritual sons, while I gave my life to this church, with repeated crises of traitors that would set us back, who begin to count the assets and figured in their position of knowledge, knowledge is power, just wait till the old man dies and some of them had already figured out who would move into Secret One. I don't have any family. Didn't. Mother and dad dead. No brothers. Truly live, Luke 14. I don't even know my relatives. They want to know me, they come to church. Last time I went to a dead relative's funeral, a cousin who I grew up with decided that was the time to express his resentments to me and say I always had a silver spoon in my mouth. He's lucky the occasion prevented him going to the hospital. All that lazy, worthless snot did nothing but hunt and fish and try to drive trucks while I work 40 and 60 hours a week and earn scholarships and went on. I've not spoken to one of them since. Don't intend to. They know where my church is. Get a pass. I used to tell my staff about Rothschild, who sent his sons to different countries and then ruled Europe for a generation. They all lost their first love, if they ever had it, and kept me a prisoner with the hard choice: get rid of them and shut the church down, or figure out how to survive their lack of genuine dedication. And all you have to do is look at the difference between this studio and where it was a couple of years ago. They didn't care. They became a gang that wouldn't rat on the bros. It was them against me. God sent Mrs. Scott, and I didn't know her potential. She fell in love with me, I fell in love with her. But she fell in love with me first, and I didn't want to fall in love with anybody. And I fell in love with her when her spiritual life began to flower, as she, having fallen in love with me, fell in love with God. I'm telling you now, if something were to happen to me, though she says she's going to go first because she gets things ready, if something were to happen to me, Mrs. Scott is the next pastor of this church, and anybody that doesn't like the thought of that, just get your ass out right now. Don't even wait around. I've got a bunch of teenage sons and daughters in this congregation that don't much know how or want to adjust to their father finding a new love. Well, then go eat at some other table. Not discussable. And as long as there's breath in my body, you will never have a choice in the spiritual matters of this church other than to follow me as I follow Christ. I will make the spiritual decisions in this church until the last breath is out of my body. And if you don't like that, don't let the door hit your butt on the way out. Yes, sir. Now, I want to hear from you people across the nation to let this congregation in Los Angeles know that you will support me if I'm preaching with my wife singing, a cappella, and a blackboard and a microphone and lockdown cameras and only a few volunteers that may survive and an empty building that I'm teaching in. I want this congregation in Los Angeles to understand who needs who. I don't need them. They need me. Yes, sir. I got enough broken down failures in this congregation, just like this person. I just read a message. Sit down, folks. Didn't identify himself. King's House, he wrote, yes. Cincinnati, Ohio. I just recently got a computer, and I'm listening to your program. I was once a voice of faith. It's been a very long time since I've seen him. about 15 years. God has been stripping me away like an onion. It has been a painful process. I went from San Francisco to move to Los Angeles. I worked for Dr. Scott. I don't know who this is. But when things got tough, I tucked my tail and ran to Cincinnati. I don't know who it is. He preached a message yesterday about being a giver and not a taker. I'm going to start giving again. Well, he wonders why he's been stripped like an onion. I've never misled this congregation. I babied you when I began to feel the emotional ties. But I came to town preaching the same message I'm preaching now. Luke 14. If any man will come after me and hate not his father, his mother, his wife, his children, his brother, and his sister, yea, in his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. My first wife turned traitor on me. Don't want to tell you the details. But I've always been, in terms of faithfulness, the victim. Not a perfect person, but when I make a commitment, I keep it. She surprised me on my 23rd anniversary by filing divorce papers and suing the church. When she was losing the battle, and she did, regarding the church, she wanted marriage counseling. She said, all you do is go to Luke 14. My response was, you think some bonehead earthly psychiatrist is better to give counsel than Jesus? I'm the same 19-year-old that you pursued and wanted to marry. I got this funny trait. I never liked women, didn't want any. Well, I saw you at a lot of them. I still save pictures and notes to prove, in case anybody wants to make an issue, who was chasing who. I guess it's something about women. They don't know what to do with the unpossessable and the ones that's not chasing them. I've seen more boobs, twats, and all other parts than most men alive. But God interests me more. I came to town preaching that message. I said to her, I'm the same 19-year-old. I'm changed. We're partners in everything else, except where my ministry goes. You only got one choice in that. You either go with me or stay home. But I had this dream when I came here, I would have spiritual sons. You don't know how close I was to giving up because of the broken heart of seeing what these spiritual sons had become who used this ministry for themselves when God sent Melissa into my life. And it was the darkest day of some of their lives when I announced I was marrying her. Now, I'm very forgiving, more so than God, because I don't see the heart. So I still have to give some credence to sorry, sir, and tears, and mouth repentance. I sat and prayed this afternoon. I said, God, if you don't let me finish Romans, give me enough years to clean the carnality and the corruption out of this church. And let nobody be mistaken. I will cut this church down to nothing. Or you will get your act together and understand that God gave to you this domata to bring you to completion, and you are not my judge, and you better not even think about it. And I've made a mistake of hiring some children who have raised in this ministry whose parents love their kids more than they love God, and I'm telling all of you parents, if your kids don't make it with me, it's their fault. Because I've got 25 years of dealing with worse than them and forgiving them over and over again. But they will learn to face their faults and face their mistakes and come with their hat in their hand and apologize to the pastor and this church if they have failed in the stewardship and lied in their commitment when they came here, and I find a parent sympathizing with them, you're going out with them. You understand that? You either swap the butt of your kid and tell him to make his peace with his spiritual father, or you take your kid and get out of this church. That's the price of them working here. I will not tolerate whiny, crybaby kids going home to their parents and telling, bad-mouthing their side of the story to rationalize their failures. We have a woman that's been banned from this church for a long, long time for cause. She sneaked a letter in the offering Sunday morning, either in the dock box or the offering plate. Didn't you hear me a few months ago chastise an ex-employee who used the offering plate to put a debriefing in?
Yes, sir.
That sacred, worshipful instrument that carries the offering is not a place to get to the head of the line. Have you ever heard me talk about having to deny my dear mother the opportunity in her last years to sit on the front seat of the cathedral, the joy of her life weekly, because low-life, self-centered old-timers here would come up to my mother, "Oh, Mrs. Scott, oh, Mom Scott, it's so wonderful to see you here. Would you give this to Doc?" Prideful sisters of the family, like Miriam, "I've been here long enough, I don't have to go through the channels." I'll insult my pastor and Mom Scott by, under the guise of coming up and sweet-talking Mom Scott, shove things in her hand. What's she going to do? She's going to give it to me. That's lying and deceiving to get to the head of the line. Well, I wasn't as interested in the letter that had an offering, which I put in the same sacrilegious category of bribing your way to get your message through. Don't underestimate the pastor you have and the discernment that I have. Go find one of these hiring lackeys out there that will smile at you when they hate your guts and care more about being liked by you and a success in man's eyes than trying to save your soul. I wasn't as concerned about the letter as whom did she con, since she's on the ban list, into delivering her self-serving letter, trying to involve me in her personal problems, in her miserable, messed up life that she messed up herself. How many of you have been told by me, I don't counsel? Go find a pastor that wants to serve as your sexually deprived wife under the guise of counseling. If your man doesn't love God, leave him. If your woman doesn't love God, leave her. Ain't going to work anyway. Can two walk together except they're agreed? The letter is not the issue. Who did some usher who falls for a smile of this pretty woman and do her a favor? No. I find her family, either a cousin or a sister or whatever it is, of a family in this church, there had been nothing but problems with some of their offspring. Did the favor. Either stay out of that iron gate and don't come to the cathedral, or make your choice now. God comes before family. Go join Pat Robinson's family-oriented ministry. Or what's left of Jim Baker's. Do you have to hate your family? No. Anybody that doubts my love for my dad and my mother, pretty crazy. But you notice, they came here, I didn't go there. They had to call the mission board, and I'm an only child, to find which continent I was on. So I announced when they came here, it's not discussable how I treat my father and my mother. That's between me and God. I didn't have to announce to them. They'd learned it long ago. I'm the pastor of this church. You either follow me as I follow Christ. You are my natural father and my natural mother, but in this church, I'm the pastor. Now, the weakness that's developed in our church is there are families that have grown up in the church. You had better settle it in your home. You ain't playing referee. If a member of your family has a problem with this pastor, that member of your family better make right and join and right the fellowship that he caused a break or she caused a break in, and you better not play referee or you're going out with the one that had the problem. Well, can I not even talk to you? Yeah, you can talk to him. If it's your son, You're my son. You'll be my son till you die. But whatever happened when you were working in that church for the pastor and his wife is between you and them and God. Don't discuss it with me. Because if you do, I'm on the pastor's side, not yours. Yeah, I've got discernment. I know what's going on in this congregation. I've announced several times there are too many people that used to work for me. And the difference between working on an ordinary job, you mess up on an ordinary job, you know you're on that superior, and that job is on your resume the rest of your life. So you may think he's a dog, but you try to part with somewhat peaceful terms. Not for any spiritual reasons, for your own self-preservation. When people make a spiritual commitment and don't live up to it, you've got yourself a problem if you're the normal man and woman. You've got to rationalize your failure away. And the best way to do that is to say you made your commitment to the wrong person, that you were wrong in your judgment. I've not asked to be anybody's idol. Idols are to be worshipped or broken. I am your pastor, and God put me here, and 29 years ago I said you will learn to respect the position if a monkey occupies it. That's not going to change. Not debatable. You got a problem with this pastor? You're wrong. Not discussable. You're wrong. We don't need a referee. We don't need to negotiate. You're wrong. Let me say it again. You have a problem with this pastor? You're wrong.
Yes, sir.
What if I have a problem with your wife? You're wrong.
Yes, sir.
Not discussable. Well, I know you're not doing it the way Doc can do it. Good. She won't put up with some of the crap that I put up with. I've asked her to do one thing. Free me of those that have used their knowledge in this ministry for their own self-preservation. Now, there's a war going on. And the same as when Joshua drew the line and said, who's on the Lord's side? It's not discussable. You will follow me as I follow Christ, or you'll get out because you've decided I'm not following Christ. Well, everybody has a right to be wrong. So take your opinion and go somewhere else and find better to lead you. I'm not perfect, but I'm better than anybody else you'll ever find.
Yes, sir.
You better treat me like I'm perfect.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Now, all this is for those of you across the nation. You're not here. You have suffered the abuse for years of the teaching stopping and an empty chair here and the same programs being played again and again because this Los Angeles congregation will not keep their commitments, will not stay with it with their shoulder to the wheel, and it's gotten worse because some of you think that your tithes and your service for years has bought you something. It hasn't bought the underside of any toilet, even the ones not in use in the building she's refurbishing. It's bought you a place in the kingdom. As long as you can stand there alongside me. If you've got an independent ministry, get out and do it. Now, I want you across the nation to get on the side of your pastor because I'm your pastor too. And hold my arms up until this congregation either gets out or gets in. And it'll be a little of both. I'm asking for 300 to commit themselves. And I've said it again and again, I want to repeat it. Don't even try to make the Sunday morning service at the cathedral or the time you serve there as a cameraman or an usher or security part of the 12-hour commitment. That's the other 4.8 hours in the 16.8 you owe to God. The tithe is the Lord's. You say, well, I never ever heard of time. I really think that every Saturday from sundown to sundown was more than a tenth of their hours. That's 24 hours. Seventh year. The third tithe, which was not just paying the bill to go to Jerusalem, time at Jerusalem. Don't pit your biblical skill, most of which you've learned from me, against me. I'm the spiritual father of most of you, and I've passed enough tests. I don't need to pass any more with you. I'm not on trial. You are. I want to say it again in case you didn't hear it. If God takes me home, the next pastor of this church is Mrs. Scott.
Yes, sir.
Because she has one goal. The 60,000 hours that I have taught will be reduced to print. We'll play around the clock. And she'll keep me preaching until she joins me. But I want to tell you something. She can teach what I've taught better than I can teach it in some respects. And in about five languages I can't speak. Tempted to have her come up and write the verse in Russian and Chinese next Sunday. So, just settle it now. If you're sitting around here thinking that, like the Worldwide Church of God, four or five of you can take over and write books about how wrong I was and... Sorry, the post is taken. I've made the choice under God, not discussable. Get used to it, folks, because it ain't going to change. I've been with other women. You never saw me put a woman in any place before. That's what's bothering some of you. You know, Paul was pretty chauvinistic. Somebody asked me, you've heard me say this before, what did Paul mean when he said, let your women keep silent in the church? I said he meant, you women in Corinth, keep silent in the church at Corinth. Women were his primary supporters. Wasn't a man, with the dangers of travel in those days, who carried the letter to Rome, it was a woman. Except for Luke, there were no men that ministered to his needs and taking care of him, it was women. I'm sure his anti-woman statements were the result of a bitch for a wife that he got away from, and there's a lot of legitimacy in the suggestion that the thorn in his flesh was his ex-wife, but he said what it was a messenger of Satan. He had to be married to be a member of the Sanhedrin, but she sure ain't around. And he doesn't have any kind words about his departed. But women, just like Deborah, I can just hear her telling Barak he gets his ass down there in the valley to fight or he's going to lose it because she will take it off of him. I had the good sense to know when the right one came along. So I want to settle this. I don't want to have to talk about this anymore. It's a done deal. And I ask God, give me enough years to get those that are nothing but canker sores on the face of this congregation out. Well, what do? Get in line. Volunteer. Throw your hat in the ring and quit coming around here like some King Kong prince of the domain that you only do things that you like to do. You're not needed. Well, I'll pout. Well, go ahead. I ain't going to run after you. I don't care. Go to hell. You had your chance. Well, this is not the doctor that has always forgiven me and given me another chance. Right. Ain't it wonderful? You know, a divorce, you go through grief. You think you're going to die. Then you get mad. And you haven't really arrived until it doesn't matter anymore. You drove down the road and saw them burning the side of the road, you wouldn't urinate on them and put the fire out. That's where some of you have brought me. I ain't hurting about it. I'm no longer mad about it. Just burn. You don't even deserve my urine. Now, I want those across the nation that are carrying the major financial support of this network to get on the phone and tell me whose side you're on, so I can take your King's House number if you're not on the right side. This is war.
Yes, sir.
I don't need a bunch of fat butts sitting around the congregation analyzing whether I'm doing it right or not. I have a couple in mind that don't much like the way Melissa's doing things because they've been in King Kong position so long. Well, they have the chance. Didn't do it. So up yours. Now, I want to hear from you across the nation before I start addressing the congregation that's here. I can take your calls here, too. I need about another 100 reservations for the Cathedral Sunday. Secret 16 still growing. But it's the 300 volunteers that will give 12 hours a week and mean it. I'm going to take on, I've spoken very favorably of the Clark Pinnock people. But they got a problem. They criticize the theology for bending to the age that had to gain acceptance in the world by buying into Aristotle and Plato's definitions of God. Clark Pinnock needs to look into his soul and see how much he's bought into this generation that wants to make love God. Love is not God's controlling trait. It's the never-ending, motivating trait. But the controlling trait, and thank God he has the power to make sure his controlling trait works out, his controlling trait is righteousness, and the righteousness that he defined is keeping covenant. And I need to hand out again what I handed out some time ago, about 2 or 3 years, when I was on God's faithfulness and showed you the names of God, the derivatives of amen, where it says God is true, God is faithful. God's controlling trait is righteousness, keeper of covenant. When he gives his word, forever it's settled, and he will keep his word, and there will be times that he will say to love, depart. He sure did it to Israel. He sure did it to Saul. He sure did it to Esau. You better understand God's nature, controlling and root, faithfulness to His Word, righteousness, keeping covenant. And He will not satisfy Himself or take anything less than keepers of covenant in eternity. So don't expect this pastor to bleed incessantly forever out of a broken heart of love, just as Jesus cried, and compromise, telling you, you will not make it to heaven until you learn to make a commitment and keep it to your own hurt. There are people sitting out there in judgment with me right now that made commitments they don't want to keep, so they're excusing it, rationalizing it, a la Reinhold Niebuhr. We're not willing to sin and beg forgiveness like Psalm 51. We've got to rationalize our sin. It wasn't really sin after all, or someone else was to blame. God kept His covenant to the hurt of the cross. He bought the whole field, which includes you covenant breakers, to get the treasure. Fathers faithful to Him in their covenant. Half the habits of a lifetime are in a child. 46. You parents had better teach your kids to stop lying, which they seem to have the natural ability to do when they learn the first few sentences of the language. We even saw in the earlier messages in Abraham, members of the monkey family, Lucy, who blamed somebody else for her dirty. Remember that? Didn't even have to teach that animal how to lie. Clark Pinnock's wrong by elevating love above righteousness. He's right by seeing in God's love His improvising, reconstructing attempts to find ways to express His love without violating His righteousness. But heaven is a righteous place where people can be trusted and are trustworthy. Not rule book checking. Trust. What makes a marriage? Perfect cooking? Bed making? House cleaning? Hard work? Paychecks? Trust. Without trust, love will not last. Or it will be abused. We've been abusing God's love for years. His last act was to pay the price at Calvary. And that's why Paul opens Romans saying two things were uncovered. His gospel, the good news, another chance, covers us. Implants the righteousing agent in us. Also uncovered, wrath. To some of you fools in my congregation that have forgotten that God's eyes are on you every minute while you do some stupid, self-centered, self-serving, prideful act. Eusebian. Not living with an awareness of the all-seeing eye measuring you, which gives you no right to measure anybody. And unrighteousness. Covenant breakers. Promise breakers. Trust breakers. Steward violators. Now, I can take anybody coming here trying, failing, their reach being beyond their grasp. falling. You get up without excuse making and try again and count yourself lucky that your spirit of repentance lets you still attend the church. And it's not going to change. I will find a church that wants to walk with me to glory, not steer your own boat to damnation. I want the nation to express support for what I'm doing. Now get on the telephone, and I want you in California or Los Angeles to keep making your volunteer commitments. Now get on the phone. I want everybody to listen to me. Everybody that's on the phone, tell them they can stay on the phone. Just tell them to hold a minute. It's like I'm interrupting a phone call. Just tell everybody that's on the phone they can hold, they can hear my voice in here, and just hold. I want to say something. I just have a perfect illustration of what I've been telling you for the last 50 minutes. Remember the message you read from Cincinnati, Ohio? I just recently got a computer listening. God's been stripping me like an onion. It's been a painful process. I went from San Francisco to L.A. I used to work for Dr. Scott. He preached a message. Remember that message?
Yes, sir.
Voice of Faith's name is here. King's House says yes. Cincinnati, Ohio. This is not the message that came in. One of the old guard members here that was just recently hired, given another chance, and just this week fired again because he's an egomaniac. He comes to work to avoid getting in trouble. He thinks he's a genius like all computer people. He substitutes his judgment on everything. You can't correct him without him giving 1,000 reasons why he didn't make a mistake. In fact, he used to have a privilege of sending messages more directly to me than anybody, until I discovered he was going to use those messages, if he had a line somewhere, to point out to me that I made the mistake if I didn't remember something he told me in some message I didn't even read. I just discovered, as I sent my wife to find possibly the name of this man, where he was, who sent this call, to find that that's not the original message. It's been edited and rewritten by this old guard member that's just been fired and is given a chance to not be banned. It was recopied for Dr. Scott. It wasn't, yes, I'm a King's House. It's, I don't even remember my King's House number. How would I find out what my King's House number is? My name is. And he gives me his name, his address, phone number plus cell phone number. I'm going to start tithing again. I just called that person over. I said, get out of my sight. This is the same as what Saul did. This is what I've been putting up with, folks. Old guard members, you remember what Haldeman and Ehrlichman did to Nixon?
Yes, sir.
Huh?
Yes, sir.
Old guard members that have decided they know more than I know. Old guard members that, you know how Doc is. Old guard members that think for me. Old guard members that edit and scream. That's a lie. Oh, on the old one it says, message recopied for Dr. Scott. But the one I got doesn't say, message recopied. I don't know why it was recopied. I can't find a prayer of a reason. Because he writes, easier to read, it's double-spaced than the recopy job. Controlling what comes to me, taking the place of the prophet, that's what Saul did. I'm cleaning house, folks. If you're on my side, say so. Get on the phone. I dropped a message on the floor. You know, the tragedy of this old guard person who edited that message and left the man's name and address and phone number off. And, he did it without a conscience. They've been doing these things for so long, like the sons of Eli in the tabernacle. They don't have a conscience about it. You sit out there and say, why don't you fire them? I could have fired them all a long time ago. I've been lamenting this problem for more than 7 years. But I can't do everything. We're a very big organization. And I went to bed every night with the decision to shut half of it down, collapse the ministry, move back to King's House One, and set the stage for some successor pastor, and go my way. Or hang in another day. Now, my wife is dedicating her life to building another staff that will keep commitments and be more concerned about dying to self and coming alive to God than hypocritically pronouncing commitment while they look out for themselves and do nothing as a steward for God's work. Do I love this guy? Yeah, that's a problem. But God's got to break him. I'm not going to do it anymore. He's got one problem. He's too dumb to know how dumb he is. You've got to be smart to know how dumb you are. And this computer age is producing a whole generation of dummies. They make fast money sitting on their butt letting a machine tell them yes or no. And they think a little computer knowledge makes them a second Apostle Paul. I want to tell you, you can get demon-possessed in front of a computer as quickly as you can in front of a Ouija board. If you've got any brains, you'll plead the blood and ask for a dose of the Holy Spirit and reject and curse Satan before you even turn it on or boot it. It takes possession of you. This same guy caused a problem today in his debriefing. And it's been this way consistently. He can't be allowed to deal with any vendors. I want to tell you something. It used to be that I constantly was having to carry the responsibility of staff members who would not pay bills on time, not do things promptly, not do business the way it should be done. And the buck always stopped at my desk. I want to tell you something. My wife is paying the bills. And we are current. And if there's a bill not paid, it's because the vendor is trying to collect something he doesn't deserve, didn't earn, or failed to send the bill. There are no delinquent bills, and there are no unpaid bills without cause. You realize, how many of you remember the electric bills of error in the last few years in California? Do you realize that we deal with such things as people in the Caribbean and in Africa that have figured out ways to tap in on our phone lines and run up thousands of dollars of bills from Haiti, or not Haiti, I'm trying to think of the Caribbean country. We had pros tap, which was it? Tobago? Tapping in on our lines. Old guard people just paid the bill, never analyzed the calls. We had people working for us who made more personal calls in the I'm talking thousands of dollars. 10 business calls on church lines. My wife has cleaned the act up. We are current. I got blamed for people not being paid on time. I didn't do that. There were old guard people that knew how to get people on their side and punish those that weren't. You don't spend 50, 60 hours a week as I do getting ready for Sunday and read every phone bill in an organization this large. She does. This jerk came in today saying that cable and wireless said they hadn't been paid since January. And we had until such and such a date to pay him. Is that possible? No, it isn't possible. You ever hear of... Oh, I know the old saying of people don't want to pay bills, checks in the mail. But have you ever heard of checks being lost in the mail? You ever heard of people not sending bills and then trying to suddenly wake up and send you 4 months of bills? Or some bad employee in another organization that didn't do their job and then now want to say they sent the bills and we didn't pay them? Doesn't happen. Used to, doesn't happen anymore. But this person didn't even consider the possibility that cable and wireless was wrong. He bought it, hook, line, and sinker, and put us on the defensive. It was a foregone conclusion, no longer to be debated. His mind was fixed in granite. He called the vendor that, in the various, I don't know who he talked to. They keep the pastor on trial and won't believe the pastor and believe every single crooked business in the nation that calls collecting money. I would have said, are you talking out of which orifice of your body? We pay our bills and you stupid asshole, how come you didn't send another repeat bill? I expect people who work here to always be on our side and make the other guy sputter and want to hang up.
Yes, sir.
The business hire the bitch of the century to be their credit supervisor.
Yes, sir.
And I got a bunch of milquetoast sissy men. I'm sorry, but I'll look into that. Look, go home and let your husband satisfy you, or take it out on him. We pay our bills. What are you talking about, you stupid asshole? The customer's always right.
Yes,
sir.
God, give me a man. We got traitors in the midst that don't know who to fight for. We are right, even if you think we're wrong. And if we discover we're wrong, it's the first time. That's the stance. That's the stance every other business takes while they're trying to cheat you. We're not trying to cheat anybody. So don't let the cheaters bluff you and intimidate you, you sissy. Go home and ask your wife to find a man. I had it. I'm still capable of getting mad on this one. I really want to get to the urinate on the fire stage. Figure out which side you're on in this war. These are the people who would have kissed the ass of Enron when they billed us twice and would call and say, you owe us money.
Yes,
holy mackerel, they ought to give a medal to that cooking woman for beating Wall Street out of anything. I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. They send that poor cooking woman to jail. I mean, if we applied that standard, how many people would go to jail for selling a house and not telling everybody before they sold it what was wrong with it? How many people go to jail for selling a car and not saying, it just did this? Or how many people go to jail for the person you married because they lied to you till they got in the nest? It's a sick world. Billionaires go free. And this poor dumb woman, she should have had me as an attorney. There's more lying going on in Washington and in the federal prosecutor's office than she could tell in 20 years of prison. You ought to send that referee that threw the shack out of the game last night to jail. Take the place of that cooking woman. If you can't come here and decide which side right is on and leave your referee immaturity outside the gate, don't come here. So here's the guy editing my messages, dumping in his debriefing, that we've somehow wronged cable and wireless. We're still paying archaic phone bills here that my wife will probably reduce 50% or more because nobody cared to bring our phone system up to the modern bundling system that would cut the bills in half. It's happened. How many years since the phone companies have gone independent and you can negotiate your contracts and renegotiate them again and again? We've been paying bills that go back 25 years on archaic lines, twice what we should be paying for years. And this genius back there couldn't figure out how to solve some problems here. All he can do is become a carping agent of the opposition to put us on the defensive. I'm getting so mad I may go back there and emasculate him. If I don't let some music run and you call me some encouraging call, get on the phone! You know, this time on our satellite, shortwave, and internet, star people, I can deal with you directly. Pastor, I'm on your side. I want to be one of your mighty men. Good. You know, I'm well aware I'm going to outlive most of my congregation. That's casting bronze. Heart attack, cancer, every one of the devil's attempts have failed. But I constantly hear, who will succeed you if something happens to you? Well, now you know. I have to ask you more. She says she's going first because, I said this earlier, she gets things ready. But she's 35 and I'm 74, so that means she's younger than most of you, so don't think you're going to outlive the pastor now. You know that you could watch the Roman series over and over again for the rest of your earthly life, no matter how young you are in this church, on a large screen in the cathedral or at King's House One, and you still would not absorb all that I've taught on Romans alone. and you sure won't find anywhere else. And the mark of the people that really are the people of God, anybody that thinks you've heard one message on Romans, I already can sense the ones that think, well, he's still on the 25th verse, so, you know, I can go away now and come back a couple of weeks, and then I'll learn what he's going to say about the 26th verse. You're nuts.
Yes, sir.
And too dumb to come to this church.
Yes, sir.
People that count. The ministry will still go out over the air, and another generation, should Jesus tarry, will hear the teaching that hasn't changed. BF 166, the teaching I'm doing round the clock is still just as valid and as rich as when I first taught it. But I think you're figuring out, when I finish Romans, I will have taught the whole Bible. When I finish Romans, you absorb all that I'm doing with Romans, you'll know more than if you went to a seminary. So this lighthouse will continue to beam out the truth till Jesus comes. And my wife has more passion about it than I do, because it's transformed her life. I don't have the benefit. Once in a while I listen to myself again, but normally I come so full and God helps me sort it and push out, trying to get across the concept of the day, that I have to listen to know everything I said. I came here looking for the uncommon man or woman that wanted to stand with me when I stand alongside Paul and reap the eternal rewards of what this teaching ministry has done in a sea of idiots. I got a message here written by somebody. Let me see if I got it here. Yeah, here it is. From Otisville, Michigan. Pastor, you're the only one teaching it right. The longer I live, the more I notice. And the more people and the more teachers I encounter, the more I notice. You got that?
Yes, sir.
The ones that are even close to being right are plagiarizing me. You can't find a preacher across the country who doesn't listen. They just don't want to admit it. I got a message the other night from a bishop, honest enough so I could use his name, down in Arizona. He's a bishop of a whole organization of churches. You're the only teaching I listen to. This ministry will go on. I want to cross that comfort zone and tell you, I probably will outlive all of you. But just in case some of you are waiting for me to die so you can somehow assert your position, you better be under 35. You understand? Now get on the telephone. Sunnyvale, I don't get it how so many people in Los Angeles can be within crawling distance of the cathedral and not show up. I don't either. Bradbury, I used to work for Dr. Scott in the old days. It's like night and day with Mrs. Scott taking care of the administrative business. There's no comparison. Mrs. Scott does everything she can to take care of the costs. She's amazing, and I thank God for her. That's a testimony of a person that was both old and with the new. I want to tell you, I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for Mrs. Scott. God sent her. You're going to accept what God's done or get out. I'm here in acceptance. The people that count know I'm right and are going to get along or get alongside and do the job with me. And the onlookers, I feel like the day I got up to take an offering with the old church that elected me, didn't want to come here. Didn't want to do it. Everybody said I was insane to do it. It was an impossible situation. Congregation had been abused, but still thought they could sit in judgment. I mean, all they did was sit there like a bunch of dumb dorks while the previous administration praised them and told them how great they were. They didn't even know they owed $3.5 million. You could hear the gasp across the congregation when I said, you owe $3.4 million. Four or five messages in tongues every service. The pastor would interpret it. Not once would the Spirit tell those people they owe $3.4 million. All the Spirit told them through that interpretation was how great they were. And then I came, started telling them the truth. And they're sitting in judgment. And I got up to take an offering. And that's where the phrase, march and keep your mouth shut, came. The Spirit came on me, as He does sometimes, and takes over for what I was going to say and says what He wants to say. And I said, I've been on trial. The last minute, I'm going to be on trial in this church. I thought I came here to help this church and to save this church. And it became apparent that I was God's man to save it because we were doing it. But I've come to realize that God raised up this church for what He wanted me to do, too. Now, you've got all the quid you're going to get. You're out of debt, or I've solved the debt problem. Now you're going to start giving the quo, or pro quo. You're on trial, not me. And you're going to march and keep your mouth shut. And that was at least 27 years ago. And it needs to be reiterated. I got a bunch of overgrown children in this church that need the lesson I tell you to teach your kids. Put a rug in the middle of the floor and tell that little brat that's not near as cute to everybody else as he is to you, or she is to you, don't you ever get on that rug. Why? Because I said so. Then go sit down on it yourself. Well, you're there, why can't I go there? Because I'm your daddy and you ain't mine. And I said so. And that's the way it is. Then they'll learn they don't have a right to equalize every relationship. Some of you think that, well, I correct you so you can correct me. It don't work that way. I can get mad at you, you better not get mad at me. Because I'm quite sure my anger is to save your miserable soul, whereas yours is to protect your miserable soul. Isn't that a double standard? You're getting smarter by the second. That's exactly what it is. God takes care of protecting and disciplining me. You're sheep, and I'm shepherd. And if you want a shepherd, get a staff that works. And go find yourself some sheep. Get on the telephone. I said we would go in increments. God's spiritual numbers significant in the history of the church. First, we'd go for 70, then 120, and then we would go for the 300. We're at 119. One more volunteering, 12 hours, no strings, to serve your pastor in this ministry, whatever we tell you to do. And I've got the 120. Then we'll bear down to get the 300. Come on, give me that 120th one right now. Get on the phone. Concord, pastor, is the first steps in the commitment to give my life. I served as a volunteer in January for 1 week. Wow. What a joy to have seen Mrs. Scott in action. You made the right decision. That's right. Pasadena, pastor, I've been volunteering since 1991. That's 20 years, isn't it? No, it's 10 years more. 1991, for 13 years. Since Pastor Melissa came on the scene, the calmness and clarity of direction has been most satisfying. It is a pleasure and comfort knowing that you have someone in your corner upon whom you can rely unconditionally. I constantly thank God for her. P.S. Never mind about talking about leaving here anytime soon, because I'm just dazed from 74, and I've asked God to keep me around for as long as you're around, and I'm shooting for 120. Thank you for having me. Good message. That's a good message. Yeah, that's a good message. Now, whatever I focus on, other things suffer. You're not making reservations for the cathedral Sunday. And I'm at 121. So we're heading toward 300. Come on, let's keep moving. You're on telephone. Now, I want to tell you, there was a time over these 29 years when if the congregation withheld their support in Los Angeles, we wouldn't be able to have the national and worldwide ministry. Now, if the national audience withheld their support, we wouldn't be able to maintain the Los Angeles ministry. It's shifted. God's doing. And I want to tell the nation that in spite of me doing the disciplinary work, there are some real gems in this congregation. There's a solid core always there. Doesn't matter what we ask, it's the same ones, for the most part, that pitch their hat into the ring for whatever the fight that we have. For their sake, I don't intend to allow the fringe to drag them down either. I came looking for the uncommon man or woman. It's supposed to be an honor to get a pass to come to the cathedral. It ought to be the greatest honor in the world to be part of this elite band of 300. Yes, as we claim the promise, by the 300 will I save. Yes, now, stay on the phone and let's get this job done.